Hey everyone, we are here and it's going to be an amazing show. We had a little bit of a rocky start. And so if you are out there, I say thank you so much for hanging on and waiting. This is the very first show here on the Web Radio Network, and we are unveiling mystery. And my most special guest is the very wonderful host of the Paranormal Portal. And Brent, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be on your debut episode.
Thank you so much, Brent Thomas of Paranormal Portal. And you know what? I am so happy you are here too.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. I know we've talked a few times, and I've always enjoyed our conversation, so this is great that we get to connect again.
Oh, this is so great. And you know what? I just want to say thank you to Stan Fikes and his wonderful wife, Teresa. And it's just been a wonderful experience so far. And I'm really happy to be on this web radio network. Super, super excited. So, Brent, I got to tell you, I've been trying to read the book and finish it before tonight that you are writing or have written. And I hate to say it, but I couldn't finish it. Oh. So I definitely want to talk about the book tonight. But I would like to first start with if you could just share a little bit about you, because I think you are new to Web Radio Network. People probably have heard of you, maybe, or watched your show or listened to it. But could you like talk a little bit about, you know, what it is you do?
Yeah, so my name is Brent Thomas. I'm the creator and host of Paranormal Portal, which is both a YouTube live stream show as well as a podcast and an audio-only podcast available on my podcast. I've always had an interest in the weird, the bizarre, the unknown, the unsolved, the magic and mystery of the world. I've always been a huge enthusiast of this because... as well in the last time we talked, but I always like the idea that there's still magic and mystery in the world, that it's not just all classified and labeled and, you know, and sitting on a shelf. I mean, that to me sounds like a pretty tragic world that doesn't have the intrigue and mystery and wonder that, you know, the world that I believe exists does. I think that's, you know, in our hubris, we like to think that we're in command, we've conquered this, that this is our realm, and whatever your background is on that thinking. But it's very common that people have this idea that, you know, we're king of the hill. We've conquered the map, and in many ways we have. And this isn't a slight on human achievements and what we've managed to do. I think that all of that is amazing, but I think there's still a lot for us to learn. And certainly when the paranormal happens, it's like something's being demonstrated that is absolutely amazing. Something's going on where the laws of physics, as we understand it, break down. The logic breaks down, reality breaks down, and we're left in this state with like, well, what the hell just happened? This isn't supposed to be, because the world that people know just doesn't have that. It's very rigid. It's concrete, but this stuff happens. And I don't think that this stuff is where things are going sideways, where it's broken or a glitch, as a lot of people like to say. I think that this is the breadcrumbs. This is the demonstrations that our world is dynamic. It's expansive. It's fluid. It breathes. And we're a part of that magic and that wonder. And I really believe that this is a lot of what Tesla might have been talking about when he's talking about discovering and exploring the non-physical. Because once we do that, we'll learn more in a decade than we've learned in all of recorded history. And I think that this stuff is really probably an example to us. Like, hey, this is what's possible. This is what's waiting if we just explore that. So it's kind of a romantic vision maybe, but I really think that this stuff is incredibly profound, and it's not just the sideshow of life. This isn't just the back alley of normal. This is the wonder. This is the mystery. This is the quest that still lies before us. If we decide to look at this and examine what's going on and see what it can teach us. So that's why I started the Paranormal Portal, because I've had a lot of experiences myself. I've had quite a few, but the idea that, I want to understand this. I want to understand what I've been through, what I've experienced, what I've seen, and the things that I've gone through. Not that they've been traumatic or horrible, but they've left me in a state of, but I want to know what's going on. How did these things happen? What is the mechanics of this? And I want to understand. So the portal is kind of my discussion, my exploration, my journey into this weird, wonderful, amazing stuff to try to understand what's going on. Before I started, I really thought I can do a show like this, because I know about, ghosts. I know about Bigfoot. I know about UFOs. But then you start down the rabbit hole and you start to realize all that you don't know. And anytime you come to some kind of understanding, then it spiderwebs into a million other things you don't know. And it's this expansive, ever-growing journey. And I just love it. I love doing it. I love diving into this stuff, and I love exploring the possibilities of this. So that's kind of the impetus behind me starting the Paranormal Portal.
I just love that awesome answer. And it was so fascinating to just to hear some of the things and how you explained it, like with the web-like, imagery and the portal itself and needing to find the answers, because that I just feel so kindred in spirit with you when I do discuss this with you, because I feel exactly like you do. Like, we can have all these amazing and strange or horrific things happen to us, but it's like we need to find the answers. I do. I can't just walk away from what is this? What happened here? So I love how you explain that so eloquently. It's just fascinating. And that's why I actually love your show, because I'm hooked on it. If I could actually stay up and watch it every time, I'd be right there with every single person every day that you have a show. But I just can't. I have to watch the reruns. So can you tell me, don't exactly know the correct date, but when did you actually start Paranormal Portal? Wasn't that long ago, like 7 years?
Yeah, I think my first show ever was in 2016. I started it on Truth Frequency Radio Network under Chris and Sheree Geo, and I still have a show that's there. I simulcast some of my YouTube shows over there, two of them every week. But that's where it started, and it's been a quite a journey, but it's been also a baptism by fire in a lot of ways too.
Yeah. I totally understand that. And shout out to Chris Geo and his wife, because that's, one of the connections I had with you is Truth Frequency Radio and our wonderful Kev Dave Baker on KBS. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of through him that I think that's how we got our connection, because I think he in spirit sent you to me. So I really think that. So basically then you do, you're not just solely, or how do I say that? You're not just on Truth Frequency Radio. You have your own kind of network, or just the YouTube and all that and the podcast. So you can just simultaneously send to them.
Well, so the YouTube show is actually quite a bit different than the podcast. So the YouTube is the live stream shows, and I treat those more like, I do have guests on from time to time, but usually I treat those more like variety shows where I cover lots of different things, do the Paranormal Portal news, do Discord group conversations that I post questions in the Discord group, and then we go over it on the live show, and then I dive into stories and discuss cryptids and ghosts and all that stuff. So that's the general format for the YouTube show, which is a lot of fun. And the live chat, of course, is a great part of that. I mean, I have this wonderful community of people that continually come back and have these amazing conversations, sometimes actually about what I'm talking about, which is nice. Sometimes I'll be neck deep in stories about ghosts or Bigfoot, and I'll look down and they're discussing soup recipes. But that's the beauty of the community. It's like sometimes they're right with you. But I mean, since I've done the Discord thing, they're really tied in and dialed in with what it is. So I think a lot of that was my learning curve too as a host. You know, how to integrate all of these elements into a show that is cooperative. And so I think I'm improving a bit on that, but the podcasts are generally me interviewing sometimes celebrities, but most often it's people that have had experiences, people that have been through things much like yourself. And you of course were a guest on one of my podcast episodes as well. And talking about everything you experienced. And I really love that, because that to me is really the bread and butter of it all, is to talk to people that have been through these things. And there's a few reasons why, one of which, because I think a lot of times when people have been through traumatic paranormal experiences, they feel like they're in a bubble. They feel like they're all alone. And there's a stigma attached to that where it's like, well, who am I going to talk to about this? You know, I can't go tell my friends about it. They'll think I, you know, hit my head too hard, or I'm not, you know, been huffing paint. And then they're kind of in their own place. And so they may hear somebody come on the show and talk about their experiences. And so often after shows, I get these emails like, wow, you know, I heard the guest you just had on, and I experienced something like that too, and I'd love to talk to you about it. And then it becomes this really cathartic group therapy kind of thing where people are able to put down these things they've been carrying sometimes for decades with nobody to share it with, because they don't have those connections in their lives, but then they find the community. And the other part of it is that I love talking to experiencers, because every one of them teaches me something new. Like, everybody can watch a cereal bowl move, but each person watching it may tell you a little bit different version about how it moved. And somebody may notice a detail somebody else didn't. And so many times in hearing people explain their experiences and what they saw, how it behaved, what happened, you know, the who, what, where, why, when's, it'll just make a light bulb go off in my head. It's like, oh, well, that kind of helps me understand this other question I had in my head. And it just turns out to be this really neat give and take, and the sharing, and that expands, and it's just almost geometric. It's just really fascinating. And I love talking to people, you know, especially about this stuff. When I first started doing it, I didn't really talk about my own experiences much, but then I started diving into my experiences, and I was nervous about that, because I have had a lot of experiences, but at the same time, I was nervous, like, well, is that going to sound just too convenient? Like, oh, sure, you got a paranormal show and you've got a bunch of experiences, of course, you know. But I went on a limb one day and just started talking about it a little bit on some of my shows, and the response I got was just so amazing. Like, wow, I really loved it when you talked about that. It really made me feel like you understand, and it created this synergy between myself and the audience. And I think that was a great thing as well. So it's just been this incredible journey of this amazing topics of wonder. And I couldn't be more grateful for finding my place, you know, and finding my path, finding my lane.
I agree totally with you. And I feel that you're so spot on with the people that, like myself and like you, once we've had these experiences or lived in a house that has ghosts or spirits or entities or energies or whatever, you know, the name could be, it is very difficult to speak about it. It is very difficult to get people to believe you. I actually feel very good right now, because I feel like with everything that's happened with our life and experience, I've been extremely validated. and I've had documented evidence and all these things. So I think I'm one of the lucky ones because of that. You know, there's a lot of people that have not gone to that level, you know, like you're speaking of, that people just they don't want to share their experiences. And so I think you do offer a wonderful outlet for that with what you are doing, because I love all of the stories that you tell, and you'll actually tell the real stories, real ghost stories. It's one of my favorite parts of your shows when you tell the stories. It really is. I just love that part. So there's something new though happening with you that I know we should talk about, and that is the documentary that you are participating in. Can you, and I saw the promo for it, and it was just outstanding. Can you discuss that with us now? It's that it's been, you know, out to the public.
Yeah, I kind of fell into it by accident, and it's kind of a weird thing. When you first start hearing your own voice, it's really weird. Like when you're listening back to your own shows, it's like, oh, that's how I sound. is that good? I don't know if this is good, but you know, I always got really nice compliments and stuff. But I guess one of the things that was really amazing to me was when a group, the Irish Bigfoot Research Organization, was doing their first documentary. They'd done it and they'd finished it up, but they were doing an American release on Prime, and they were listeners of the show, and they reached out to me and said, would you mind doing our trailer for Prime, just narrating it? And I was like, well, no, sure, that's fine. I'd be honored. And so I did. I wrote up some narration for it and then recorded it and sent it to them, and that was out there. Well, that was a really neat experience. I had a lot of fun with it because I always thought voiceover stuff was really cool. I didn't know that I would be a person that would be considered for it, but I was really honored, and it really meant a lot. So I did that, and then that went real well, and I guess they got real good feedback on it and such. So they then turned around and did their second narration or second documentary, which the first one was called Walking with the Wild Man, and the second one was called The Woodwose, Walking with the Wild Man too, and it's their quest and their journey as the Irish Bigfoot Research Organization to look for proof over in Ireland of these hominids that are running around and such. So I did,
wow.
I did write and I wrote all of the narration for the second documentary and then recorded it and sent it back to them, and they pieced it all together, and that was out on Prime. And that was really awesome. And so then COVID hits. They were planning on doing a third one, and it COVID hit. So that pushed everything back, as with everything else in the world. But they did finally get done with the principal shooting for the third one. And just a couple months ago, I wrote and recorded all the narration for that. And so that one is to be released any day, really. They're still shopping a platform to be released on. It was going to be on Prime, but apparently the criteria on Prime is somewhat nebulous for documentaries. So they're working with that, but they're also looking at a secondary one, but that one will be out any time now. And that's the European Bigfoot Walking with the Wild Man 3. And so,
wow,
it's just really cool to have been a part of that and to be part of the team with those guys. They're really amazing.
Wow, Brent, that is just so cool. I mean, like, this isn't even the first one. This is the third one. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And this one, it's like spectacular. I have to go look at the other two now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
The first one, I only did the Prime trailer. So when you're on Prime and you look up Walking with the Wild Man, there's a trailer that plays, and that's me narrating it. But then the second one, I actually did the entire film, and then the third one as well. So, yeah.
How exciting. Oh my gosh. Wow. So your voice is going everywhere. It's going all over the globe.
I know.
I told you, you have a wonderful voice. I mean, it's really a great voice for storytelling and everything. So I'm not surprised by any of this. And speaking of storytelling, you know, I kind of mentioned this at the beginning about the book that you have written. And I think it's just absolutely wonderful. And it's, it takes, you have to really, read it. It's a reading book. If you're going to read it, it's beautiful. It's just absolutely beautiful. Can you talk about, what, when you decided to write this and why a little bit more in the name? I think the name is perfect.
Okay, so essentially, it was just when I first started writing it, I'd just gone through a double knee surgery where I had a rebuild on one knee and a surgery on the other knee. So I was really hobbled up, and I was a single parent at the time, and
Oh my goodness.
with two children. I mean, they weren't with me all the time; they were with me on weekends and stuff. But I was sitting there, kind of in my own melancholy, and I'm like, what if something ever happens to me? Who will tell my children what I believed? What I'd learned through my days and my walk and what I had sorted out in my own personal spirituality and stuff. So I sat down and just started writing, and it became this I mean, I don't know. I've never given birth, but it kind of felt like I was giving birth to this book. It was like trying to put all of my thoughts and feelings and reflections on things into words that would make sense to them with examples as much as I could. And it just started flowing and became bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I had written, several chapters and kind of looked back. I'm like, well, this is a book.
Wow.
So I was like, well, okay, maybe I've written a book then. And so I wrote a preface, a story at the front to try to tie it all together, and just create a narrative of why the book I felt was important. And then it just kept writing, and I decided to call it Reflections of a Growing Soul. And so it's all written. I'm not sure what to do with it. I would like to publish it. And I'm looking for that opportunity. I just got to find a place to publish it through. I know a lot of places use Amazon Prime and stuff, but I've heard, that basically once you submit it to them, they kind of own it, and they just, throw change at you and stuff. And I really don't know if that's what I want to happen with the book, but I haven't really found a publisher, but I haven't actively shopped one either. So it's one of those things that it's always been there. And the original purpose for me writing it was just so that no matter what, my children would know what I thought, about the world, about how to navigate it, how to look at it. How did I look at it? How did I see it? And what lessons did I glean from my path? And so that's why I wrote it. And I don't know. I guess it's my vision to publish it. I'm just really there's some things in life that I'm not good at. And one of them is knowing how to proceed with this. It's just, I don't know, maybe somebody will hear the sound of my voice and go, hey, maybe I can help them and find, it doesn't have to be like a huge publisher. I would just like it to be well represented, So that's kind of the story about how it came to be and why I did it. But it became, I think, something more because I don't I mean, I don't know. It's only my own vision. It's only my own idea. And I really think that in my view, here's my 30,000 foot view on it, is that I think our spirituality is very much a personal journey. That's not to say that everybody should have this one way of having religion or this one methodology. I think that no matter what spirituality you follow, there's still universal truths to that. And that is the journey of understanding the divine in through the walk of our world, and the divine in not in just this disincarnate glowing cloud somewhere or a person sitting in the clouds, but the divine that is us. That is a part of us. It was the gift of our creation or manifestation or however you want to look at it. And so I didn't write the book with any one, modality in mind. Not like, well, this book is written about Christian religion and spirituality, or Muslim religion or spirituality, or Buddhism, or you know, Hindu or whatever. It's just written from a point of, this is what I think. This is how, you know, I've come to find the divine in myself and in my world. And this is how that's has helped to shape my journey. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And in fact, I was reading that in the, you know, you had the chapter was, you had religion. I think it had, it was entitled religion, but I, if it wasn't, if that wasn't the exact title, forgive me, please. But oh, yeah. I know that you had different, so there was the one you were talking about spirituality. I mean, each chapter, it's very much a journey. And I love that the soul part, I do feel like that is, I believe personally that we have our highest part of us connected to God, is that's the part of us that when we are on our path, that is the part of us that is the highest part connected to God. And I believe that that is the part that helps me create songs. And that is the part that helps me put the show together. And that is the part that is coming through you when you are writing that, because it's very much like teachings, but they're so kind. It's you. I just feel the kindness, and I feel the part of you that is the wisdom. It's very, very wise. The words and descriptions in this. Well, I'm just going to call it a book because it's a book. it's very wonderful. I mean, it can very much help people. I really believe that. I believe that if you just, at any point, it's almost like one of those books that you can literally just pick it up, open it up, and go to a place, and you will find something that's going to inspire you. Now, that's what I think it is, because I tend to like to skip through a lot of things, and so I'm trying to not do that with your book. but today I did, because I was trying to go to the different chapters just to make sure I had an overall glimpse again before we spoke. And I would just go little pieces and read little parts, and each time I was like, wow, I became so absorbed in the words. So I do believe that you should be publishing it, even if you self-publish it and then publish it later with, you know, a bigger publisher or whatever. Okay. It was funny that you mentioned that, because, you know, the guy Dave Politis of 411, I've been watching his videos weekly now about the Bigfoot. So all that. So he's been having a Bigfoot class, and it's just been so great, because I listen to your show all the time about Bigfoot, and, you know, and then I've listened to On the Warrior Mode, you know, with everybody that comes on that. And but one thing I thought about he was talking about, and this might be interesting to you, is he published his first two books with a publisher in Canada called Hay House, I believe. And he said that he regrets that in a way. I mean, he wanted to get his book published, but then after the second one, I think he went on to self-publishing, because that company then began, what do you call it, when we do the audiobook. So they have audiobooks out of him, but he doesn't, it's not like he really got to have the profits from that. He doesn't have control of it. So to me, I think maybe it is that point in our life where, you know, I believe in having control of the things that I do, but at the same time, I also know that spirit and God is part of it. And I feel like to be guided by that is the number one rule for me now. But for you, I don't know. It just, it is kind of interesting you brought that little aspect up today. If you do, you know, when you are seeking a publisher.
Yeah. Well, it would make it easier. I guess, you know, with the Paranormal Portal, I'm so busy and I'm going so many directions, and certainly I know I could try to do that as well somehow, or if I figure out what I'm doing, figure out how to do it and then do it. But there's so many logistics involved with that. So, you know, I'm just I'm hoping that I mean, it might be real pie in the sky thinking, but I'm hoping that some path will make itself known, you know, that this is okay. This is my path forward. I'll keep watching for the signs, so to speak, you know, because I believe very much in that when something's supposed to happen, there'll be signs, there'll be you know, the blinking lights and such in a metaphorical way of saying it. And so, you know, I hope that can happen. I would love to share it with people because, you know, it is when, once it became a book, I realized that it wasn't just for my own children anymore, that it was just my story. And it would be such an amazing thing to know that my story mattered. Like, it maybe helped somebody figure out something in their life or helped make sense out of some of the madness or something, you know, I mean, that it could, you know, make a difference somehow. I think, you know, everybody wants to leave a footprint in this world. And so, you know, I mean, I'm very, very, very fortunate that I have a successful show and that it's growing and more people are finding it. And they're just amazing, wonderful people. And that in and of itself is just incredible. But, you know, will those things always matter? Well, maybe they will. Maybe ghost stories are timeless and the paranormal is timeless, but I think everybody will always be going through their spiritual journeys. And certainly maybe something in that book can matter to somebody and really help them, because honestly, a lot of things I wrote about were things that I had to stumble through, you know, I had to sort it out for myself. And some of it's, you know, you're very kind with your explanation of my writing and stuff, but a lot of it was brutal. You know, a lot of those things were brutal lessons. And if I can, you know, maybe take some of the brutality out of someone else's journey, that would be a real amazing gift, you know?
Exactly. And yes, I totally understand, Brent, because our greatest suffering is usually what we express in our words. And luckily, once the suffering is come to light, you know, you can actually be a poet about it, you know. So I totally see what you're saying, and especially because I didn't know also that you'd gone through a double knee surgery.
I've had so many surgeries in my life, starting at the age of 6 and had several through the years. And so I, you know, I feel like kind of like that operation game, you know.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Well, so, you know, because I my other life is a pain therapist. So I deal with, you know, people's pain and helping them with that, you know, for all these years. And so I know that is a very, very dark, must be terrible. I if it was me, I would, you know, it would be hard. So I commend you for making it through that, actually. Well, you know what, I find it interesting that the fact that you're like, you, one of the things you're saying, well, I wonder if people will always be interested in ghost stories. I have a feeling, I mean, I think they've gone on from eternity. As far as, you know, we can even go back in time, I'm sure that has. And I do believe that you shared the other day, I can't do the numbers on it, but I know it was about your podcast and that you were actually ranked in the top 10 or the top 20 of podcasts being watched?
Oh, well, so it's the iTunes charts is what it is. And essentially, okay, my podcast is in the science charts, but specifically it's in the natural science chart, is where I registered it with iTunes when I created it, because that was where Sasquatch Chronicles was and several other paranormal ones. So I was like, well, that must be where I'm supposed to be. So I set it up the same way, because I figured, you know, that's the category where these shows are. And I certainly want my show to be in that category. So basically the iTunes charts, and nobody really knows what their formula is. It's kind of a real proprietary thing, but it's the big charts. The iTunes chart is the big chart for podcasts, you know, to see how you're doing. And they're very volatile. Like, you might be one number one day and then 20 points different the next day or whatever. But we just went through, I just went through 2 weeks of being number 7 or a week and a half, number seven, then sometimes it'd be number eight, and then the next day, number seven. But in the top 10 of natural sciences on the iTunes charts. So it was just really incredible because I'd been close, like in 12, 15, you know, many times here and there, but then it would be up to 20, 30 or whatever. But then just to have that extended run at the number seven for so long was just like, wow, that's amazing. I mean, that was really, I was very, very proud of that, even though it's, I mean, it's a bit of hubris. I readily admit that, because at the end of the day, it should be about doing the best show you can and just hope that people enjoy it. But I think those charts also are showing that people are enjoying it, I think.
Oh, yes. Are you kidding me? Yes. And if think about this, Brent, okay, number seven, and like, I mean, can you imagine how many podcasts there are that that are in that realm? I mean, there could be hundreds or thousands. It's iTunes, you know, and I wonder if some of the, also maybe the documentaries that you're doing, the voiceover work, you know, that alone is going to bring you a new audience every single time somebody sees that, you know, sure. And hears your voice.
Next, I'll be doing cereal commercials. They're great.
Oh, that's so funny. I love like the Andy Griffith Show. I don't know if you know that, but I do. And on the old, I have my old videos of it, and they have that, you know, where Andy just will start right there doing commercials. You know, they had him running during that time. So yeah, I think you should do your own commercials. And for cereal, or for your book. Hey, you could do a commercial for your own book.
I probably will have to read it and record that as an MP3 or something to go along with it. But yeah,
you should.
Oh, thank you. I hope to.
There's what a lot. Is your book?
Well, yeah, I know it is, and it probably should be in my voice, I guess, if that would be beneficial. You know, also I've been getting into doing some investigations as well, paranormal investigations, and there'll be some videos coming out on our YouTube channel of those in the hopefully near future.
Oh, wow.
Several things like that. So I'm that's what I mean by going so many different directions. And I don't know. I just feel like I want to do as much as I can while I can, you know, while it serves a purpose, I guess. You know, I'm not getting any younger, and I kind of found my calling late. You know, I remember being so jealous of people when I was growing up. I graduated school with some people that knew from you know, middle school age or elementary school what they wanted to be. And God, they just went that whole path and did it and became that. And I was one of those people like, I don't know, what do I want to be? I don't know. And I've done a lot of different things in my life, but I always felt this real, I don't know, almost a personal agony. It's like, what do I want to do? You know, I did things like music and rewritten music and recorded music and stuff and performed and did a bunch of that and had a great time with it. At one point I thought, well, do I want to be a musician? But then, I mean, that's such a crapshoot. There's so many incredible musicians and performers out there that, you know, I at least put my name, you know, my hat in the ring and did what I could and had a blast doing it. I figured it was an incredible thing to just write songs, to perform them and see people respond. That to me was amazing. Even if it was only a few hundred people, it was like, wow, they liked that. That really felt good. And then I did end up using some of those songs on all of the songs on the podcast are my music as
well. I love them. I love them. You know that. I just love that. Those songs are great.
Thank you. But then that was one thing. And I did that for a while and it was like, wow, you know, it's tough. I'm not a recording engineer. And so I never really was able to get the sound that I wanted or the, you know, the quality that I wanted, but I was able to record ideas, which was good. And that's something that, you know, I still pick up even till today, but I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And I did so many different things until it was the day that, and it was like, I knew Chris Geo from a mutual friend. He was introduced to me and we started talking and then boom, the idea came. And this is, you know, again, in my late 40s, it's like, wow, this is what I want to do. I want to do a show. And I talked to Chris about it. He's like, well, let's do it. And it was funny because the idea really came formed. I mean, it came formed. It came with a name. Paranormal Portal just came out of my mouth. It was like, oh, I like that name. I came out of my mouth like I channeled it. And I was like, oh, and I want to do this. I want to do this. And I want to do this. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. And so he really, made it happen. And if not for Christio, there wouldn't be a Paranormal Portal today. So I really do owe them a lot. But it wasn't until late that I figured it out. So now here I am. And, you know, I don't know if it's the fourth quarter or not, but it's at least in the second half. And so I got to make up some time here and get as many things on the map as I can, because, you know, I guess I just want to leave a footprint, right?
Yeah. And we have talked about the journey to finding your path before. Mm-hmm. And I just love that, because I feel like, it was almost like serendipity, how it all just fell into your mind. Yeah. And then it just began, you know, even though I'm sure it was a task to get it built, started, but it seemed like every year, it sounds like it just flowed and kept going.
Yeah. And you know, when I first started, I really thought, well, I want this to be big. I want it to be big. I want people to be hearing it all everywhere. And I really wanted those numbers to grow. And I was like agonizing over that over and over and over and over and over. And yet the show grew really slow and steady. And in hindsight, I'm really glad that it has until now grown that way, because I think if it would have been an instant success, like boom, all of a sudden everybody knows about the Paranormal Portal and they're tuning in, I don't think I would have been able to handle that. I don't think there's so much that comes along with this. Like, everybody wants to do a show, and God bless them, go ahead. I mean, put your name out there, do what you can, do the show you love and want to make, and see what happens. But there's a lot of downsides that come with it too. Like, there's a lot of crappy parts of it, like where people try to dig holes through your soul because they just can't stand that you're doing something, you know. And there's negatives and things like that. And I was always nervous, because I've always been a sensitive person throughout my life, and I was always nervous, what am I going to do when somebody really critiques something? Like for instance, my music, you know, I didn't use it. I didn't ever use it on the show as an ego thing. I never did. It was just, when I first started doing the shows, I would play other people's music, but then I started it started on Truth Frequency Radio. And then I started simulcasting on YouTube after maybe a year. And I would always use songs that I like what, you know, whatever, old rock songs or whatever. And had a blast with it, but then started getting hit. It's like, this is a copyright claim on your show, and copyright claim. Oh, dang, you know, I can't do that. And I was like, well, what do I do? And I'm like, well, I've got this, a bunch of songs that I'd written. I was like, I know I can use those. So it was like, it was really born of necessity. It wasn't like, well, I'm going to do my own music and really show everybody what I got. It was never that. It was just because I didn't have any other choice. And so I did use it. And it was nice to get the feedback that I go, wow, what was that song? Who's that by? I like that. It's like, hey, me. That was me. And then some other people would be like, that song at the beginning, is that you singing? I was like, yeah, me. So it was really neat.
Yeah, it really is. And so you do have that. Like, we go to the Paranormal Portal website, it will take you to the music, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I've got the Bandcamp thing linked on. So paranormalportal.net is my new homepage. And thank you for reminding me. I don't think I ever linked that. In fact, I'm ready to know.
Yeah, you need to link it. It is on Bandcamp for sure.
Yeah. My music is, there's several songs that I've written for the shows, purposely for the shows. And then there's a couple songs that I just written that I use on the shows. But they're on brentthomas.bandcamp.com, and they're available to download if you want to check them out. You can listen to them there too if you just want. What songs is he talking about? Well, you can listen to, I think there's four songs posted over there right now that are originals that I wrote and performed and such. So they're available there. But yeah, I mean, it was never an ego thing at all. It was just like, well, what am I going to do? I know I can use this. I wrote it. It's mine.
I think that's great. I think we should definitely put that. And they usually come on during the break. And one of them is just like, well, there is a combination, but it's just really, I love it. I actually love that the songs. So you have a fan with me in the music. So I'm curious though, so about the paranormal investigations, and did you film? You must obviously must have filmed some of it. What can you talk about what you experienced or what was going on?
Yeah, there was this one, like, so I there's a couple of really cool ones. So the first one that I've been on recently, well, there was a couple of times in I think 2018, no, 2019 and 2020, where I went over to Montana near Missoula, Montana, and investigated an old ghost town on top of a mountain out there. And that was really cool. That's going to be the first videos that are coming up. I had just recorded it and kind of put it out there, but it really didn't get any attention at all. So I'm like, well, maybe I got to reformat this and make it more into an episode rather than, hey, here I am doing this, watch,
Yeah.
kind of drags people through the experience. So I'm working with an editor right now, putting those together into a more 20-minute episode of, the highlights and what happened and some backstory. But I just earlier this year went to Spokane, Washington, and investigated the Davenport Hotel with Charles Howard Johnson, who's a friend of mine, and he's both a Bigfoot and a paranormal investigator. And we investigated the hotel, and it's this beautiful, I mean, just literally like a 5-star jewel box hotel. It's just amazingly beautiful and a brilliant place. And we stayed in the circus room, which is the most haunted room there, and had some really cool experiences. Like, a lot of it I wasn't able to get on camera, but there was one thing that kept happening, and I was like, this is really bizarre. Something's really playing with us. First of all, Charles had set up some cameras, and his cameras kept failing. Like, the batteries would drain and wouldn't work or whatever. We had that happen a bunch. But I was wearing flip-flops, and we had two big queen beds in this room. And it's kind of a gaudy room, but it's kind of like classic circus design. And it was one of the original owner's pet rooms that he made for a friend of his who was in the Barnum and Bailey Circus, or one of the circuses that would
Oh,
come in.
wow.
So he had this room specially built for him, and it's, got a lot of activity in it. So one of the things that kept happening was I would, like, we'd be walking around and stuff. We'd get back to the room. I'd kick off my flip-flops, not kick off. I would take them off. I don't kick my shoes when I take them off. I just literally step out of them. They're flip-flops, and they're right there on the floor where I stepped out of them. But I would, like, get on the bed or run, use the restroom, and come back, and there's one shoe there. I'm like, where the hell's my other shoe? What happened?
Wow.
And it came to me, it's under the bed. So I literally reach my hand under there, and sure enough, under the bed is my flip-flop. And I'm like, well, maybe I kicked it, maybe I did something, but I'm gonna pay close attention to this. So I put them on again, wore them, and then we came back again. I very carefully, gingerly stepped out of them and did stuff walking around the room, did some investigating in the room, and then came back by my bed. There's one shoe there again. I'm like, what in God's name is going on? I said, it's under the bed again. Sure enough, reach under the bed, there's my shoe again. And it happened a third time. And I was like, oh my God, something keeps moving my one shoe under the bed. And it was like the third time I was pretty significantly under the bed, like it was kind of kicked. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So that was really unusual. Another thing was we had done, Charles and I had used dowsing rods, and I'd never used dowsing rods before. So I was really curious about this because I'm into energy. And actually, I don't know if you know this, Mercedes, but I went to school for massage therapy as well. I'm still a certified massage therapist, but I'm not licensed. But
I did not know that.
I studied polarity and meridians and all of that. So a lot of body energy stuff. So I was like, oh, there's, dowsing rods would be really cool.
Yeah.
So we stood opposite of each other, and we're just holding them, and I'm, asking him, kind of explain the mechanics, what to do. He said, just hold them real still, and then we'll just ask, is anything here? And instantly, my left hand and his right hand are holding dowsing rods pointed at each other. We're standing right opposite of each other. They both those hands on one side, the other side stayed absolutely stationary and still, but both of our rods at the same time curled in towards our other arm in a like a 90 degree, and then stopped and then moved back to point right back at each other in
Wow.
synchronous. It was absolutely synchronous. There was no hesitation. No, it was like they were being moved together by some energy field there. I was like, wow, this is really cool. So then we did some EMF work, went around with a K2 meter, and he has like a Mel meter, and we found some spikes in the room, and then we set up. It's basically it's a Huff Paranormal's portal, but it's a build that's based on that design using noise gates and reverb and a sound bank, and got some really cool responses that we recorded. But he also put up this cat toy, and it's like this little clear acrylic ball that has these lights in it that will flash if they're moved.
Yeah.
And it sat there and sat there and sat there for an hour and a half. Didn't do anything until suddenly the K2 starts spiking, words start coming through, and then that cat ball spikes all at once. It's like, oh, that's really cool. So we got that out. Then we went down into the lobby, sat at a table, and trying to do flashlight tests. And for those of you that may not be familiar with it, it's where you have these twist-on, twist-off mini flashlights. And if you position them right in the neutral place where they're off, but they take very little to turn them on and then off. So they're used as a yes or no or indicator of something manipulating them. So we set up at one table down in the lobby, nothing happened. Set up at another table, nothing happened. Moved to this one stately table with these big wingback chairs, leather wingback chairs around it. And all of a sudden that flashlight's going on and off at questions. And we were asking questions, having discussions. And then Charles and I would just talk, and sometimes the flashlight would come on and off as if it was agreeing with what we were saying or disagreeing or whatever. It was really cool. So went back up to the room, came back with his SLS camera. And you guys might be familiar with that from ghost shows. It's the structured light camera, and uses the Microsoft Kinect sensor. And you see those stick figures.
Yeah.
We scanned the whole lobby, but when we came to that table, in one of those wingback chairs, was a stick figure sitting there. My God. And it was right there. It was like, it's always there. And I was like, oh my God, that's so perfect. This is the only table we had activity at. And sure enough, now we're mapping a stick figure right here.
Oh my goodness.
And that's, in a nutshell, is everything that happened. But visually, it was just really cool and just breathtaking place. And another time we went to a bar that's not far away from here. It's in a town called near a town called Rathdrum. And I think it's called McD's bar. I might be wrong. I'm sorry. I'm terrible with names, but in there I had one of the most profound paranormal experiences I've ever had. In fact, I went on the confessionals with Tony Merkel and one of his directors for his upcoming documentary and talked about it, because they had an exact same thing happen there. But what happened was, we were, Charles and I, again, were investigating, and it's a haunted bar. And there's a backstory to it, that it was a speakeasy, a brothel. And apparently one of the ladies of the night had met an ugly demise there. A former owner of the bar, which it became much later, died in the building as well, because he lived there and died in his bed. And so it's a very active place. And I talked to a lot of people that had experiences there. So Charles and I were staying overnight, and the owner of the place is just brilliant. The guy's just a great guy. And he just literally said, okay, I'm leaving. You guys just, if you leave, lock up when you go. It's just
such a good
thing. So we're staying there. And we had some patrons stay for a while to watch some of the investigation stuff and all of that. But then they left, and it was just Charles and I in this haunted bar. And so I put my phone, and it's an iPhone, I put it on a selfie stick, and I decided, well, I'm going to do a bit of an intro. I tried to stream, but it didn't have any bandwidth to stream. So I'm like, well, I guess I'll just record it all and we'll make a video later. And I did an intro. Hey guys, we're at this haunted bar, gave some backstory, and so we're going to be digging into this. And I got done, pushed the stop button. It's still in the selfie stick, and I'm just holding it, talking to Charles, who was about 4 feet away from me setting up a camera. And suddenly my phone, in the selfie stick, not in my hand, starts going ear, ear, ear. And I'm like, what the hell is that noise?
Oh my God.
Look down at my phone. There's a red bar going across my screen saying, emergency 911 call initiated. And I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? And I'm like, I wanted to hang up, but I'm like, no, you should never hang up on a 911 call. You got to let, talk to the operator. And so I pulled the phone out of the selfie stick, and I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, Charles, record this. And he's not doing it. And I didn't know why, but I had to talk to the operator. I'm like, she's like, 911, what's your emergency? I'm like, ma'am, I am so sorry. I don't know what's going on. My phone was not in my hand, but suddenly made this noise and it called you. I said, I'm really sorry for this, but there is no emergency. She said, so there's no emergency. I said, no, ma'am, I'm so sorry. I didn't even know my phone could do this, but I don't know how it did it or what happened, but something's weird going on here. And she started saying something else, but then my phone hung up on her.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no. You know, and so I'm standing there and I'm like, Charles, record this. He's like, I can't. I'm like, why? What's going on? He said, my camera's dead. And I'm like, what?
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't just his batteries though. He had it plugged in. The camera was fried at the same time as my phone dialed 911 by itself. It was just incredible. I just got chills. And I'm like, oh my God, this is just the beginning of the night. What's going to be happening? Well, after that, the activity pretty much flatlined. I mean, it was just very, very minimal activity, if anything, nothing really substantial, but it was that big crescendo right at the front end. It was like, wow, something really on here. So
wow. They were trying to get you in trouble too.
Like maybe they, you know, Charles had been there before and he's investigated there before, but that was my first time there. So maybe they were like, yeah, we got to haze him a little bit. We got to make sure he's earned his keep. So, you know,
I wonder, you know, something I'm just kind of wondering if somebody had ever called 911 for an emergency there, you know, that might be interesting to, did somebody die in the parking lot from a 911, you know, they had to call 911. You might check into that because it could be like a real, you know, like a spirit trying to reenact something for you.
Yeah, it could be. It was just one of those things that at the moment I was just like, I didn't know a phone could do that. I've had phones since they were first came out. Now, the interesting thing is that I posted that on Facebook and Tony Merkel of the Confessionals messaged me and said, you got to be kidding. This happened to you? I said, yeah. He goes, the same thing just happened to my director who was working late at the studio. And his phone was sitting on the table in front of him and did the same thing, started alarming. And then it did an auto 911 call. And they were, doing a documentary about the editing, a documentary about their research into skinwalkers. And the interesting enough, this near this bar that I was investigating, the owner said that there's reports from some locals of seeing skinwalkers. So I don't know if it's tied in or not, but man, that was just bizarre. So
well, Brent, was it the same night?
No, actually, it was one night different. But the interesting thing was mine happened at, I think, 1:42 a.m. And theirs one night before happened at 1 a.m. So
very interesting.
Right? Yeah.
I remember seeing, I think I saw something about that, something about this call or something on Facebook. It was like a little video blip or something, or
I just posted the blurb about it, like, oh my God, you guys, this just happened. I can't
Wow. But that is very interesting that it would be that happened to the same person. I mean, to another person,
right?
Not the same, you know, the same kind of thing, because your phone is not supposed to dial 911. And no, I think that those are both definitely spiritual connections there. Wow. You know what? This sounds really good. I think this looks very, this sounds very interesting. I'm going to be watching.
Yeah. I wish I could have recorded that, but Charles's camera.
Oh, I know.
No, there was no recording. It's like, oh no, that was a profound event.
But I mean, even just talking about it, you know, I was just like right there with you. So I was able to, you know, like, sure. See that. Did you get to stay in the hotel by yourself? Like, did they close the hotel down?
No, they didn't. It was still open, but it was just, so there was only a handful of people there. It was really a quiet time of week, and it was done on purpose that way. So that, you know, I mean, it's a huge hotel.
Yeah.
A lot of funding to close down a whole hotel, but
totally. I get that. Wow, that just sounds really. Where's that hotel at? I can't remember what you said.
The Davenport Hotel in Spokane, Washington. That was really
Davenport.
You can go online and look at pictures of it, and it is literally breathtaking. It's so beautiful in there.
It sounds wonderful.
None of it felt horrible. None of it felt like dark or horrible. It just felt like it was a busy place not only in our world, but in theirs.
Yeah, they're all just still there, sitting in the chair.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that the last time they had the Tucson Ghost Society came out here, one of the evidence that they had found was, I was going to type this in one of the paranormal portal questions the other day because it was something about you guys were talking about experiences, but then I decided I wouldn't type it. It would take too long. But that's one of the things that they had asked was like something about, they were asking, who was there, and and it was like they became very quiet. And so I guess they did the knock and a shave and a haircut knock. And that, and they responded with the dun 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 dun. And then they responded, bump, bump, somebody over there in the house. But one of the questions was about playing cards. And so someone in the house over there responded like, yes, they wanted to play a game of cards. But they actually wanted them to leave. So they did end the investigation because the question was, do you want us to be here? If you don't, or, then please let us know. So that was their sign to leave, was the knocks. And so they packed everything up and left. But when I'm in there now, which I was just in there, I think, okay, there's somebody sitting at this table, waiting for me to come play a game of cards with them. And I just keep thinking, like, it was kind of interesting when you said that, because I'm like, I don't have one of those, film.
Oh, right.
Things.
Yeah. Cameras,
yeah. I mean, I wish we could bring something like that out. I think that is one of the best pieces of paranormal equipment they've ever made. I think it's great that you could actually have that and take that on your investigation.
Yeah, I wish. I mean, it's not mine, it's Charles, but he's got some great equipment, and he's been at this a number of years. I've lived in several haunted houses and haunted locations and stuff, so I've had a ton of experiences, but I haven't actively investigated a lot. But I've been doing it now for a few years and really enjoying it. I know there's certainly risks involved because you're dealing with the unknown, the unseen, and you don't know what you're dealing with because, we can't see them. They're just, they may not be telling you the truth if they do say. So, I mean, I recognize that there's risks involved, but I do believe in shielding and protecting myself and know of several modalities to do that. So I don't ever want to sound, arrogant because, you challenge the universe and the universe will answer. But I just think that it can be done well, and it can be done respectfully, and it can be done tastefully. I don't agree with investigators that go in and provoke and try to cause them to become upset so that they do something, because we don't understand what they're doing, why they're here. If they were human, why are they still here? What are they doing? What are they working through? And how would I feel if somebody came into my living room, just a group of strangers, and started asking me to go make them a sandwich and change the channel and move a cup across the table for them? And, I'd be pretty pissed. So I think that investigations should be done, with a lot of care and empathy, because we don't know what they're going through. We don't know what their experience is. I mean, they could be in their own personal torments, their own death state. They could be, working through some horrible tragedy that they lived through. And, to go in and then start demanding that they perform like a circus tiger is just ridiculous,
Yeah, I agree with you. And I don't ever mean to actually kind of make light of the situation out here either, because we've only brought, the one group out that I trust. Mm-hmm. Because number one, this is my family and my land, and we're just now finding peace here the last little over a year. So everything I do is very cautious and caring. But I do find that I don't want to ever bring somebody out here that's going to be antagonistic, because you do have to be careful. We have to, be very careful how we deal with these spirits, and like you said, there's trickery, and Lord knows I've dealt with enough trickery. So It's very important, and I'm glad, and I know that I wouldn't have said anything, but I know that you do take extreme precaution when you do anything like that. I believe we've talked about that in the past.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's important because, you got to be careful. You don't want to bring anything home with you either. So.
No. Like, no, we don't. You know, we still do the Lord's Prayer every time we come into our gate, and we still do the Lord's Prayer every time we come into the front door. So, I mean, it's almost like second nature to us now. Everybody here has to do it, and all the things that we have to put in a protocol, we do, and that's just how we live our life. Now, I guess not everybody's going to do that, but that's what we do, and that's what it is working. So one other question I have before we wrap up our wonderful conversation. Is there anything that you have coming up that you want to talk about that we haven't already shared, or you haven't already shared with to me?
Not that I can think of, other than the videos of the investigation stuff. Those will be coming on the YouTube channel. Other than that, not that I can think of. I mean, there's a lot
Okay.
of that I do, intend to do in the near future, but none of them are even in deep planning stages right now. So nothing that I can speak of. And other than that, I mean, just would love to have people tune in to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/paranormalportal, or the podcast available on all the platforms, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Pandora, Spotify, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, Castbox, blah blah blah, a whole bunch more. And just visit paranormalportal.net, and that's kind of the homepage for everything Paranormal Portal, including the social media, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook, and Instagram, and whatever else. There's any information will be there that you can link to if you're interested in following up with the shows, or reaching out to me.
Okay, that sounds really good. And one thing I did just kind of popped in my head too was you were just at not long ago, you went to out of town and went to like a Comic Con or a Paracom, or what
Right.
was that?
Went to Phenomicon in Vernal, Utah, and that was really fantastic. And I got to meet and interview some of the cast from the Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. Got to meet and interview James Vieira, who's the Search for Giants from the History Channel. He's a great guy. And Stacy Brown, met him there, and I also met Marie Dumont, who's the person that I released today on the podcast. Or yeah, today's Monday. Yeah, I did it at like midnight, so it was actually feels like last night, but it was still today. But yeah, just had a great time there, and it was really neat. I guess when the thing with doing the show is you never really, I mean, you can see numbers that happen that show that people are listening, but it's a whole different thing to get out to a conference and have people come up, "Oh, I know you. I love your show." And they want to take pictures and stuff. It was really an amazing experience, but it was really fantastic also to get a chance to meet so many listeners face to face and to have conversations with them. And I'm so grateful for that opportunity. I'm so grateful for how many showed up that, knew about the show and wanted to meet us. That was really cool. Don went with me. We had a great time, and it was a lot of fun. We don't do a whole bunch of conferences, but there's one coming up in June in Spokane Valley, which is near where I live. And that's a Bigfoot Roundup that we're going to be going to, and possibly some others next year. Nothing's really planned, but yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. I love going to conferences. I really do, because it's just a whole nother thing to, and it also gives you a great chance to network with other hosts and other shows and just meet people. So great experience.
That is so awesome. I think, actually, I think that would be fun. And I'm glad that you at least have one lined up almost for next year, because I'm sure that people are just loving to actually meet you in person finally after being a listener. I will say that one thing I love about your show is I feel like everybody is almost like a family, and I feel like everybody really is connected when they listen to the YouTube show. And it's really interesting how how that is on your particular show. It's very nice. I like it very much. I
Yeah.
really do.
I'm really
Well,
very fortunate with the number of people that have found the show and how many have made it their home. I the chat community has always been a huge part of the YouTube channel, and I can't take any credit for that. That's the community that they formed themselves, and it's just amazing. So I'm very blessed that way.
you are blessed, and you've done a wonderful job with that show. And you've done a wonderful job coming on here because, originally you started talking about the magic and the mystery. And to me, I think all of this, that's why I called it Unveiling Mystery, is because I think everything has a sense of mystery. Really, there's secrets to be uncovered, but there's truth that needs to be uncovered, and there's just the magical sense of what is that? Or, so I think that the name I chose that just popped in my head as well, just like you said, just it was like boom, there it is. And I'm like, so I think that just kind of is a neat way to cover like everything that I feel is interesting. So thank you so much for being on this very first of my podcasts with the Web Radio Network.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me. I just loved it, and I loved meeting the gentleman that I met while we were waiting for everything to come together. I forgot his name already.
Stan.
Stan,
So,
there you go. I thought I'd
yes.
remember it. Stan, it was great meeting you. Thank you for keeping me company, and thanks for having me on, Mercedes. I always love when we can get a chance to talk and share ideas and go through things. It's always an incredible discussion, and I always have a lot of fun. So I'm really honored to be here on your first episode. That's amazing.
Thank you. And you are an inspiration. You are an inspiration to me. So I prayed right before we went on, and I just prayed that the people that are supposed to hear you talk tonight will find you, and the messages will come through. And that's what I am hoping. And I'm also going to say a prayer right now that please, God, bring whoever he needs to come to him and give him what he needs for his new book, because that would be so great for the whole world. Thank you, God.
Amen.
And thank you, Brent. Have a wonderful night. And thank you to anyone and everyone that has been listening here tonight or tomorrow or the next day or whenever that happens, right, Brent?
Yeah, where they get here.
We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And thank you, Stan and Teresa, again for having me on this wonderful program of yours, Web Radio Network. There's a lot of amazing people on this network. And when I first saw it, I wanted to be on TFR. But then when I started to look, and I'm like, wow, this is a great network here. So I'm just super excited that this is the one that happened for me. So I'm so excited about that. And thank you so much. Now, next week, I was going to say really quick, we have Desiree Valdez. And she is the producer of Warrior Mode. And she's just an incredible media person, a spiritual dynamo. And so she's going to be my next guest on the second show. So I'm excited to have her come on and talk. And anyway, well, let's just end this show right now. Unveiling Mystery, signing out.